Let's take up on page 2. Talking in this paragraph, how it is, how knowledge can be known. And we looked at what was necessary for the means of knowledge, the Vedanta, to actually work. Because there's so many verses in the Upanishads that having tried to reach Brahman, the words with the mind come back. That Brahman can't be seen, the buddhi can't know Brahman, all of these things. It's not available for any type of objectification. So then what is the teaching methodology, really, that allows Brahman to be known? And so we looked at, if you see number 2 on the page, this is what we spent a little time on. Buddhihi nashaddasya shakti vritya brahma vijanati. Brahman can't be known by the immediate meaning of the word, right? Because it's not an object. And so we have to still use words in order to make the mind recognize the self. The reason that we can do it is because I'm here, the self is here. It's just not, it's not objectifiable. That's the problem. That's the problem in terms of any means of knowledge we want to try to use, because all of our means of knowledge are focused outward. Even outward in terms of the mind, in terms of vrittis in the mind, like moods and emotions and memories and all of that type of thing. Fantasies. Those are all objectifiable. Brahman, the self, the Atma, is the conscious being, the self-evident being, because of which all of these things can be objectified. So the means of knowledge that we have can't turn itself around and look. So the first thing they say, it's true that words don't work. They will just come back. If the words that you're using, if the meaning of the words is what we call the shakti, the immediate power of the words. The immediate power of the words is to bring about, to associate, the word is associated with the object of the word, right? So the nama is associated with its rupa. So for instance, if I say the word red, immediately the content, the vishya of the word red comes to mind. That's the shakti. You know, any tree, you know, chair. That's a tremendous shakti, actually, you know. And in fact, just a little aside, when people talk about animal communication, they talk about animals only think in terms of the vishya, the content. So they're thinking in the images. And so you think that, then you can think that, okay, to communicate with an animal, I have to think in images. But you don't, because of the shakti of the word. You're always thinking in images, because when you say the word, right, the shakti is immediately there, which means the image is immediately there. So sometimes we don't really understand how powerful the use of a word is, because it immediately has the power to bring the image that's associated with it. And so, nama rupa, the name and the form are highly connected. And so Swamiji, when he talks about the whole maya upadhi, Ishwara's form, in the terms of everything that exists within time and space, when that comes to manifestation, right, there is nama rupa. So words are also are considered beginningless, in a sense. They're considered beginningless, and they have a relationship. The nama rupa has a relationship. And so with the word, in the beginning, there was only the word. We have that in the Bible also. There's only the word. When the word becomes manifest, so does the image. So we look at the whole creation, the whole maya upadhi, as something that is a manifestation of infinite knowledge. Right? And so if you think of that, infinite knowledge, so knowledge is just like for you, if I say, if I say river, immediately, once that word river is said, it becomes manifest. Right? So you weren't thinking of a river before. So the point here is not that it becomes manifest. The point is that it's there to become manifest. And so when you look at the creation as being cyclical, that means that when it's in its laya condition, its unmanifest condition, it's there in unmanifest condition. and then immediately available for projection. So that's how the creation is viewed and how it can be cyclical, because it's knowledge, it's subtle. In fact, this whole creation is subtle, but within this subtle creation, we can divide it into subtle and gross. Just like if you have a dream, the dream is subtle in the sense that it's Maya. It comes into manifestation, and it can come resolve also. But when it's manifest, within the manifestation, there's subtle and gross. There's seer and seen. There's mind. There's sense organs, you know? And so the subtle and gross, you have to understand that when we're talking about subtle and gross in reference to the creation, it's subtle and gross is contained within the creation. The creation itself is just the manifestation of infinite knowledge. And you can use the dream drishtanta to really understand that. And how, when you're in the dream, when you're a character in the dream, how real that is. It is real. So I'm not saying it's not real. We're saying it has an empirical reality, which we call mithya. It's not derogatory. Mithya is not a derogatory word. It's just saying that maya itself is mithya, means that it is a manifestation of something which is satyam, something which is free from time, something which is non-dual that we call Brahman. And Brahman has this capacity of maya to cyclically create, to project the creation. When it projects the creation, that creation has no separate being apart from Brahman. Right? So it's true for us, as it's true for Ishvara, the whole creation has me for its truth, and the truth of my being, the Satchitatma, is pervades the whole creation as its adhishtana. It's not just pervading this body. You know, from the standpoint of Atma, there's no time and space anyway. But from the standpoint of the infinite creation, that infinite creation comes from the self, which is free of time and space. Just like if you have an imagination, it can be a huge imagination. It's not like the Atma becomes huge because you have a huge imagination. But it's that there is no other adhishtana. Even though it's free from time and space and has no size, is totally irrelevant. There is nothing else. Because time and space itself come as part of the manifestation. So the thing to understand here is that Brahman, which is yourself, is all-pervasive as the adhishtana, not only of this body, mind, sense organs, and everything that makes this a jiva, you know, but equally of the entire creation and of everyone. And so there is no separation at all between the nama rupas, maya, and the adhishtana, Brahman. So at this point, for the ajnani, for the person who needs to gain knowledge, right, that adhishtana and mithya relationship, you know, which is a mithya relationship, it's an as-though relationship, because mithya is mithya, it doesn't have any being of its own. That relationship is not understood, you know. So the teaching methodology, if we're only using Shakti Vritti, the whole teaching, subject and of the subject, the knower, and the knowledge which is to be known, if we're using Shakti Vritti, the immediate meaning of the word, we will only stay within Maya. There's no way to get out of it. Right? There's no way, because the Shakti Vritti of the word is only related to the rupas, the forms within duality. And so Shakti Vritti definitely won't work. Right? It'll just keep you. We use Shakti Vritti all of the time in terms of gaining knowledge within the creation. We also use the Lakshana Vritti, the implied meaning of words. So we have both available to us. We have the immediate meaning, the Shakti Vritti, and what we call the Lakshana Vritti. Lakshana Vritti is like if the red runs, you know. Look at the red running. We have to do something, because now we're just not talking about red. So we have this Lakshana Vritti that we also use in Vyavahara, in the world. But in terms of gaining self-knowledge, only the Lakshana Vritti will work. Because your being cannot be objectified, but at the same time, your being, the self, is the adhishtana, is the truth of the whole mithya, and it is what is self-effulgent. It is the reason that all of these things can be objectified. Not only that, all of these things were actually, when I say all of these things, as we do this objectification, we realize that all of these things, including the body and the mind and the sense organs and the buddhi and the ahamkara and time and space itself, all of them are objectifiable. All of them are known, right? So when you realize that, if they're objectifiable, what that means is not only is this world known, all the little knowers of the world are known also. So when you have a dream, you don't have any problem with this. The dream is objectified, and within the dream, there are the knowers and the known, right? That's why you can be a knower in the dream. So all of that being objectified as part of the teaching tradition, you can point to, after you've objectified everything that you thought you were, right? There's still something left. There's something left, which is me. And so you can use the words vilakshana, right? To see that consciousness itself, that existence itself, by making this differentiation, no longer is associated with the object, nor with the subject of the object, the knower of the object. It's something which is free. And you can use words to point to that, what is left. So consciousness takes on a different meaning now. It's liberated from the nama-rupa. Existence takes on a different meaning. It's liberated from the nama-rupa, names and forms. Otherwise, it's one with them. That's the shakti-vritti. But now, I'm liberating them. And now I can give them back to me because I'm there. Right? But I'm not there as an object anymore. So the whole meaning of the words are going to change. And that's what we're calling the different, like, lakshana. And then with the ananda also. Ananda, all I know, is ananda vrittis. It means shanta vrittis, peaceful vrittis, or I seem to be happy in those vrittis. But then, through analysis of that experience, I can point to the ananda, which is my being, which is responsible for that experience of happiness. So all of this handling of words, the words start here, you know, with the what we call the adhyasa, the superimposition. All these words are in relationship to this mutual superimposition. And slowly, with the teaching methodology, I liberate those words. Because here I am, right? Here I am, and I'm not an object of any means of knowledge. And that is made clear through the teaching prakriyas, the teaching methodologies, because everything that I've taken to be myself is objectified, and then I can go back and forth between that which is objectified and the nature of of consciousness. You know, and so I have to handle these words to release the words from the shakti vritti, so that they now are able to point to kind of the implied meaning of the word, that we call lakshana. Okay, so with that, this all has to be understood, this, especially if you're teaching. The shakti vritti and the lakshana vritti has to be understood in terms of how we use the words to give us self-knowledge, because words in the shakti vritti cannot do that. So here, just simply in the sentence, he says, the buddhi na shabdasya shakti vrittya brahma vijanati. Just simply, the buddhi is not able to know Brahman through the shakti vritti of the words. So the immediate can't. And then he says, kintu but lakshana vritti, but by lakshana vritti it can. So that's this shakti vritti and lakshana vritti are really essential to understanding how it's possible to know Brahman. But then he gives this number three, there's another problem. So the teacher can understand how to use the pramana and knows the shakti vritti and lakshana vritti and all this, all very clear. But the mind of the student is not available. So here he says, in this number three on the page two, mala vikshepa adi dosha yukta buddhihi na brahma vijanati kintu tad rahita. So let's just go through this compound. Just mala means impurities. Nirmala, free from impurity. Mala, impure. Impurities in the mind like raga, dvesha, the likes and dislikes. And because I have what's called binding likes and dislikes, whenever they're thwarted by the laws of the universe, I experience anger and irritation and agitation. So the mulla really begins with self-ignorance. Because the ananda is projected onto the world, my ananda is projected onto the world to make me want it. I want this so that I can be happy. And as long as I get it, I'm fine. So binding desires are fine. If we're in Swargaloka, Swargaloka is heaven. In heaven, it means I desire it, I get it. Yeah, so our Jagadisha says always, this is not Swargaloka. This is not Swargaloka. And so that means that these binding desires do not always fulfill themselves. And by the laws of the creation, whenever a binding desire means I need this to be happy, that's what that means. When it doesn't fulfill itself, I feel anger, irritation, you know, discomfort. The whole, there's a whole cascade of emotions that come off of that binding desire. So the ajnanam, which is the cause really for the raga dvesha, for the likes and dislikes, which is the cause when thwarted, is the cause for all kinds of problems in the mind. Those are the mullas, right? Those are the impurities. But beginning with ajnanam. The other thing is vikshepa. Vikshepa is agitation in the mind or your agitation in the mind, but also just a very active mind is vikshepa. It also means projections. So just to make that clear with a little association, when we say that Ishwara, the Maya Upadhi, Ishwara projects the creation, it's projected through a twofold power. One is called, we would call it Maya, which can be called Avidya, but also Vikshepa. Okay? So Avadana, it's called Avadana. Avadana, in terms of we call Maya or we call Avidya. Avadana, it covers the self and projects the creation. Right, so even right now, this whole creation is vikshepa, it's a projection. So for Ishwara, there is no avadana. There's only vikshepa. You know, like you, if you're playing around with your mind and your imaginations and you're creating some ideas with your mind, that's only vikshepa. You know what you're doing, there's no ajnanam there, it's not like a daydream or a dream, you know, for an individual, for a jiva. It's just the projecting power of Maya. So for Ishwara, it's just the projecting power of Ishwara. But for the Ajnani, that projecting power of Ishwara is still there in terms of the jiva projections of a jiva, jiva srishti, but also it covers the Atma. I have no idea who I am now. Okay. So that's the avidya that every jiva suffers from because it's part of the package. It's not like some jivas are born without avadana. Everybody has this avidya, self-ignorance, until it's gone. So this mala are the impurities that are caused by the ajnanam, and the vikshepa are the jiva srishti, all of the projections that are caused. And also, it also means the inability to keep my mind steady. So we have different tools for that. So he says mala, vikshepa, etc., doshas, all of these defects, such as mala and vikshepa, all of these defects, yukta buddhi. The buddhi which has all of these, yukta means it's endowed with all of these impurities and projections and all of this, not brahma vijanati, it can't know Brahman. Because its mind is too extrovert. I need this and I need that and this person's doing that to me and look at how they raise their eyebrow and so using mala and vikshepa really as the ajnanam born impurities and all of the projections of the jiva srishti, etc. These are all doshas. Doshas are like defects, undesirable things in the buddhi because they're not allowing the buddhi, your mind, to be available to any means of knowledge, right? So especially to self-knowledge, because the self is nirmala, and vidya not available. So the mind is just not available to make use of the pramana. So such a buddhi that's encumbered with all this mala and vikshepa, all of these doshas, this buddhi can't know Brahman. So then he says, tad rahita. Which one can know Brahman? The buddhi that doesn't have all of that, that's free of all. Rahita means free of it. So he says, but kintu tad rahita, the buddhi that's free of it. And now he gives a quote from the Bhagavad Gita, because Shruti, this Anubhava, Yukti and Shruti, in order to really gain knowledge of anything, you need a pramana, you need a means of knowledge, right? It needs to be logical, and it needs to be true to your experience. Especially, you might not understand it immediately, but when it's pointed out, you go, how could I have not seen that? Yeah. That's how knowledge is. Even the most complex knowledge, like the Einstein's discoveries, that seem so complex, for him, they would come like revelations. He'd be working and working and working and working and for years sometimes. And then all of a sudden, almost like a dream, it comes, you know. And then it's so simple. So simple once you figure it out. Once I said to Swamiji, and it happened to be a great truth that I said, not realizing it. But I said, Swamiji, this knowledge is really simple, isn't it? You know? And he said, yes, that is exactly the problem, because our mind is way too complicated. And we have to unwind so much to get down to the simple, basic reality, you know, that is so clear. Shankar said the same thing in the Adyasa Bhasha. How could I have not seen this? But it has never been seen until it's seen, you know? Beginningless ajnanam. So, anyway. So now we have to have the Shruti give its... See that this actually does come out of the Shastra. So he says, Shastra, Acharya, Upadesha, Shama, Dhamma, Adi, Sanskritam, Manaha, Atma Darshane, Karanam. I broke the 70 there. So this says the Shastra, which are the Upanishads, right, the Vedas, the Shastra and the Acharya, so the Shastra and the teacher, Upadesha, by the teaching, Shastra, Acharya, Upadesha. Oh, I see. Upadesha. Sorry. I wasn't seeing it correctly. Shastra, Acharya, Upadesha. Upadesha means teaching. By the teaching of the Shastra and the Acharya. So that means that, well, let's look at the whole thing now, I'll tell you. Shama, Dhamma, Adi, Sanskritam, Manaha. The mind, which is purified Sanskrita, Sanskrita, having Shama, Dhamma, etc., Adi. Beginning with Shama and Dhamma, it's purified. Beginning with Shama or Dhamma, you can purify by means of Shama and Dhamma. It means those qualities are there. Shama means whatever emotions, moods, thoughts, memories that come through the mind. I have control over it. I can let them go. Mm-hmm. I can say, no, I'm not going there. You know, like one of these kind of emotional things come and go. No, you may leave. I'm not going to go in that route. You have a choice. And that's Shama. That's a wonderful quality. You have a choice to just enjoy the scenery and to get engaged with some of it by choice. And if I choose not to get engaged, I don't get engaged. That's Shama. Dhamma is what happens when I get caught. The Shama fails. Then I have a choice to not act it out. Shama, I can dismiss the vrittis or keep them. Dhamma, I can contain the vritti that has become thought, the thought of the emotion that has become embodied. I can contain that. So he says, Shama, Dhamma, Adi, Sam. So the mind purified, just by the Shastra and the Acharya, which means all of these means for antakarna shuddhi are taught in the Shastra. They're all there available. And then there's this other point that's important. So the acharya will know all of those methods for antakarana shuddhi, but the acharya also knows the methods of our time. That's why they say when you have a dispute or a confusion around dharma, for instance, go to a wise person of your era. Because things change. The basics don't change, but circumstances change. You know, like what might be really dharma inappropriate in India, you wouldn't even know about that here. You know, that type of thing. But also, you can look at it in terms of the difference between Westerners and Indians in Kali Yuga, what the help that their mind needs for antakarana shuddhi is much more than just cognitive psychology, where you practice dharma and everything will be fine. That normally is true. If you stay within dharma, you'll have shanti, your mind will have antakarana shuddhi. But we have serious issues that in the very structure of the unconscious, because we have been born into a society that is full of a world that is full of a dharma, and so that means structurally the little baby child hasn't gotten all that it needs, and so we have to have means to come in and take care of that. And so since we need that now, Bhagavan has given it to us. We didn't need it before. Even Jung said, you know, before, I mean, psychology is only like somewhere around 100 years, a little more, 100 or 150 years old. It's not that old, you know. What he says is that the unconscious used to run like an underground stream without any hindrance, you know. And all of the archetypes, all of the instincts, everything were working perfectly, because the external world matched the needs of the psyche. And so they could hold the needs of the psyche. But when the external world started collapsing, like the family structure and also our belief systems and all that, when it all started collapsing, the kind of archetypal nature of the psyche didn't have any home out here. And so it's just been held inside with all these problems and those problems, and we had to have some sort of means, some of the discovery, had a sudden revelation in a way to be able to handle those internal boulders, you know, in a way that can release those processes so that the mind can have depth, that the unconscious can be at peace. So that wasn't necessary before, and now it's necessary. And so now we have it. But we have it now. We didn't really have it then because it wasn't necessary. We could just have cognitive psychology where you just practice dharma and do the things that are to be done and avoid the things that aren't to be done. It's very laid out clearly in the Shastra, and you'll be fine. And that's true for us too. We'll be fine. But now we have to heal these other things inside also. Well, they didn't have that. So anyway, that's right. I'm making a little distinction there when you say the Shastra and the Acharya. The Acharya is wielding the Shastra and needs to do that properly, but we'll have some other things to say that are relevant to our time. Not about self-knowledge itself, but about antakarana shuddhi and what in addition needs to be done. So I think that's interesting and important. So Shastra, Acharya, Upadesha, Shama, Dhamma, Adi, Samskrita, Manaha. So the mind which is purified in this way by the teacher and the teaching, Atma Darshane Karanam, that is the means, that mind is the means, the vehicle for Atma Darshana, seeing the self, recognizing the Atma. Because the teacher, who's the teacher teaching to? Yeah. Actually, the teacher's not teaching to the Atma. The Atma's fine. No problem. You're ignorant. If you're ignorant, you have knowledge. I'm just illumining both of you. Right. Doesn't make any difference at all. Because Atma is not going to change. Atma is not an object within Maya to have a problem. Okay, so that takes care of be what we call upayanishta. Upayanishta is that commitment to antakarana shuddhi, to purity of mind, because the mind is the vehicle to gain this knowledge. It's the one that has the problem. It's the one that is ignorant, and it is the one that has to gain knowledge. So the mind means the buddhi needs to be prepared for that. And so the teaching itself includes taking care of the antakarana, taking care of the mind. The greatest example, it's true in every Upanishad, but the greatest example is the Bhagavad Gita, which is absolutely thorough in both the Upayanishta, Shravana Manana Nididhyasana, gain this knowledge, and in Antakarana Shuddhi. It's called the Yoga Shastra. Yoga Shastra means karma, that karma yoga buddhi, taking all the attitudes that are necessary to understand this knowledge. So he says this, the mind, manaha, atma darshane, for the atma darshana, karana is the instrument. It's the mind that has been purified. So he's now handled both of these things that are necessary for gaining knowledge. Okay. We'll do 15 more minutes. So now, if the knowledge is being handled properly, using the election of vritti and the different prakriyas, and the mind is there and available for this knowledge, then there's something else we have to know. So he says, asau, I should have you read this, I keep forgetting. So just repeat after me. Asau buddhirapi.
Asau buddhirapi.
Palavyatya.
Palavyatya.
Na brahma,
na brahma,
vijaniyat,
vijaniyat,
kintu,
kintu,
vritti vyaptya, vyaptyaiva. So that would be kintu, vritti, vyaptya, eva.
Kintu, vritti, vyaptya, eva.
Yeah, that's a sandhi we're doing. Okay, so he says, what he says here is, also, api, also, asau buddhihi, also this buddhi, this mind, so, asau buddhihi, api, api is also, so also this buddhi, palavyaptya, by palavyapti, we'll have to see it in a minute, by palavyapti, na brahma vijaniya, it can't know Brahman, by palavyapti, kintu, rather, vritti vyaptya alone, by vritti vyapti alone. So these palavyapti and vrittivyapti are two important terms. Okay. I'm going to explain those terms and then we'll probably, let's see if I can do the Sanskrit also. Let's just explain the terms first. In gaining knowledge, there's two things that are involved in the mind to gain any kind of knowledge. The first thing that happens is that your mind has to be directed toward the object of knowledge, whatever that is. So, say it's for instance the fireplace. If I look at the fireplace, you know, I gain immediately a vritti of the fireplace. That's called vritti-vyapti. It means that my mind is now pervaded by the object of knowledge, right? But that's not the only thing that is happening. The vritti itself is inert. It's maya. It's nitya. It itself is not conscious. There's nothing in the creation that's conscious. There's things in the creation that are sattva. Sattva means they reflect or they manifest consciousness. But there's only one consciousness, and the one consciousness is Brahman, is the self. There's not little consciousnesses out here. Right? So there are vrittis that are sattva. The mind is sattva, means it has the capacity to reflect consciousness. And all of the sense organs are sattva. They have the capacity to reflect consciousness. Okay. So say the vritti, its vishya, its content of the vritti is now the fireplace. But that's not enough. The consciousness aspect has to also pervade the vritti. And it can only do that because it's sattva. Just like the mirror, not the rock, can reflect the sun, right? So the vritti, and not the tamas, the sattva, not the tamas, can reflect consciousness. So say the vritti now is pervaded. This is called vritti vyapti. It's pervaded. The vritti is pervaded by the object. Okay. But it's also illumined. So there's two vishyas, there's two as though contents to the vritti, to the sattva vritti. There's the content, which is the object, but there's also the illumination of the vritti. That's called chidabhasa, because the vritti is able to manifest consciousness, as though reflect consciousness. There's two things happening. One is vritti vyapti, it's pervaded by the object, or it pervades the object. The other is that it's lit up by consciousness because of the sattva. That's two. So because of the consciousness, we can say it is known, right? The object is known. So that's vritti vyapti. No, that's phala vyapti. That it's there in the vritti is why it is now it's able to be known, because it's there. But it's not known just because it's pervaded by the vritti. It's known because the vritti reflects consciousness. So that's called phala vyapti. So these two things are necessary, vritti vyapti and phala vyapti, in order for any knowledge in the world to be gained. Why we say any knowledge in the world, both of these functions are necessary? Because the world is, nothing in the world is self-evident, is self-shining. And so therefore, we have to have a vritti of it, and that vritti needs to be illumined. So vritti vyapti and phala vyapti are both necessary. Okay, then, that being so, how can we gain self-knowledge? Because we can't have a vritti of the self and the illuminate. First of all, the self is not an object, but then we can't illumine that object, right? It's not an object to be illumined, so the vritti can't just have an object of it and be illumined. Well, it works a little differently than that. So what he says here, asau buddhihi api phala vyaptya na brahma vijanati, he says, Brahman can't be known by the phala vyapti, but it can be known by the vritti vyapti. Okay. So now it says, now we're getting into really the new territory. This should be all clear. How is that? Well, the thing is that you are a conscious being, and you already are there. You already illumine the vritti. It doesn't matter what the vritti is. Right? It may be vritti of anything. If the mind, though, is through the teaching methodology, if that vritti is turned toward its own content, toward its own adhishtana, what it actually is, if the vritti through the teaching methodology is turned toward the adhishtana, which is Brahman, right, then that's what we call the vritti vyapti. If through my sense organs I direct you to see the fireplace, there's vritti vyapti at the fireplace. If through the Vedanta Pramana I turn the mind toward its own content, the one that's illumining it, then what the content is Brahman, not the fireplace. It's consciousness, not the fireplace. Right? Because utilizing the Pramana, we turn the mind toward the Atma. Once that takes place, then where is the phala vyapti necessary? Because the phala vyapti is the vritti vyapti. The one that's responsible for illumining the mind is now the one that is known. See what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so you can't bring in another consciousness to illumine the consciousness. Because the consciousness is already there as the very object of the vritti vyapti. You see it?
So we're like pointing the mind towards the illumination source.
Yes, through the use of the Vedanta Pramana. Mm-hmm. Through all of these prakriyas, we're differentiating the mind and even the buddhi from the Atma, from the self, and then the buddhi, instead of being the self, has it as though subject-object relationship with its very self, which has been now differentiated from the buddhi itself. The buddhi becomes mitya, having recognized its being, its me, as the adhishtana. Right? And so once that happens, for that mind, for the buddhi has recognized the atma as differentiated from itself. Before, the buddhi and the mind and the atma were just one and the same thing. So now the buddhi has as though objectified the atma, as though that's not really what's happening. It's not really happening because the mithya, the atma has always been there, and the buddhi has just relegated itself to mithya. It doesn't have the capacity to objectify the atma. The atma is already objectified, but it has differentiated itself from the atma. And so the ignorance that had caused the anyonya adhyasa, the mutual superimposition, is negated, and also the self is known. Whereas if it's the fireplace, the vritti negates the ignorance. We'll see this when we do this little panchadashi thing. The vritti negates the ignorance, and the chidabhasa gives the knowledge. But here, all that has to happen is that the vritti has to be filled with the self, right? It's not that it's actually filled with the self, because it's already filled with the self, because the buddhi is mitya, but it performs that act of differentiation. And so we say what's actually happening there to gain that self-knowledge, all that's needed is the spriti vyapti. What's actually happening is what we call ajnana nivritti. This has eliminated the ignorance, right? The vritti vyapti eliminates the ignorance. That's all you need. Because what would give the pola vyapti, you know, illuminate, is already there. So we say, in this case, for the atma, because yourself is self-evident, there's only vritti vyapti, which is ajnana nivritti. So we're not, it's beautiful, we're in gaining self-knowledge, we're not gaining the experience of the self. It's the experience of the self-experience, is already fully present. What we are doing is differentiating, letting the buddhi, through the teaching methodologies, differentiate what is mithya from the self. What is maya? Mithya means it has no separate being, no being at all apart from the atma. But it doesn't know that. It just thinks, I am the atma, which is true from its standpoint, because there is nothing else but the atma. And so the self, just like clay pot, the clay fills the pot. The atma, which is Brahman, feels totally. It's not even feeling, because there's no... If I say the clay fills the pot, there's no pot for the clay to fill. There's only clay, right? So you say the atma fills the buddhi, or the atma fills the creation, it doesn't fill it because there is no second thing there. That's what we mean by mithya. Yourself doesn't fill your imagination. You have an imagination, then you pour yourself into it. No.
So the buddhi and the external are equally
mithya
to
the satyam, to the self. So it's one self, one creation, one jagat, one creation, which we say is Ishwara, because conscious being, and in that creation, all the jivas are included. Just like all the waves are included in the ocean. So there's one water, which is the self, the water of the waves, which is the water, same water of the ocean. That's the Advaita. You know? So here, this pola vyapti, vritti vyapti is there. And then there's a big sentence. We're not done with it yet. We'll read through this sentence. It gives a nice example. So repeat after me. Iyamcha.
Iyamcha.
Vrittir. I'm going to break the sandhi. So just Iyamcha.
Iyamcha.
Iyamcha. That nyasma. Iyamcha.
Iyamcha.
Vrittihi. Deepaha.
Vrittihi.
Deepaha. So R is visarga, then deepaha. O is visarga. Vrittihi deepaha yata.
Yata.
Swa sambandha sambandha. Swa sambandha padarthan.
Padarthan.
Prakashyati.
Prakashyati.
Netata.
Netata.
Brahma prakashyitum.
Brahma prakashyitum.
Prabhavati.
Prabhavati.
Okay, we'll just maybe do this sentence. This says, when he says kim, in the previous, it ends with, you know, it can't be known by palavyapti, it can only be known by vrittivyapti, mm-hmm. alone. Kim tu vrittivyaptya eva, mm-hmm. it's only by vrittivyapti that we can know. Then he says, and this vritti, yata deepaha, just like a lamp, gives an illustration. And this vritti, for the vrittivyapti, okay, he's going to show it in two ways. And this vritti, just as a lamp, swa sambhadda padarthan, padarthas are the meaning of words, the rupas, objects, accusative, you know, 2-3. Okay. So, prakashyati, just as a lamp, prakashyati illumines objects which are within its vicinity, connected to it. Like if there's a lamp and it's shining, it's going to illumine the objects in this room, but not next door. So that the things that come into the contact with it, with the lamp, get illumined. Okay. So he says, so this vritti, you know, which then illumines, and that illumines these objects that come into this contact, into contact with it, not in the same way, Brahma prakashitum prabhavati. Can it? Is it able to prabhavati? Is it able to illumine Brahman? So, to put this in English, it's a little awkward to do it in the grammatical style of the Sanskrit. It's basically, he's saying this, a vritti is not able to illumine Brahman in the same way that it can illumine objects that come into contact with it as a lamp, like a lamp. Mm-hmm. You know, so say here in the world I have the illuminator, there's the consciousness, or here the light, you know, which is its own experience. But then this light, with the vrittivyapti, this light is able to illumine everything that comes into its sphere. But it can't just illumine, it's self-luminous, you know, it's self-luminous, but it can illumine others, it can illumine others, so a lamp can illumine other things, just like a vritti can illumine other things, you know, as long as the vritti comes into contact with it, then it is automatically illumined. But here, there's not other things, right, other than the light. These are other, the things that the lamp illumines are not luminous themselves. They're only illumined because the light comes into contact with them. So that's true for us too. If the vritti doesn't land on the object, right, it's not known. Mm-hmm. That's just kind of like a lamp. But the vritti, when here, has to objectify something, come into contact with it, right? And then having come into contact with it, that's the vrittivyapti, it is illumined. Whatever is in its content. Same for it, just like a lamp. But that doesn't work here because the consciousness which gives the palavyapti allows that vritti to be illumined, right? The only reason that the thing is illumined is because the vritti is illumined with consciousness. Otherwise, the object's... the non-luminous object is not going to be illumined. But here the vritti itself is illumined because of consciousness. Already. That's it all, that palavyapti is there because of the consciousness. Now the vritti has to recognize the consciousness, right, which is already completely present. You know? And the very reason that the vritti itself is illumined. So now it's gaining knowledge of its own luminary, right? And that's the end of it. But there's no other action to be take place. So, like with the vritti works like a lamp in the sense of illumining non-luminaries. But it's not going to work that way for Brahman. So you want to just hear how it does work?
Yes.
Is it too long for you? Let me see what time it is. It says... Kintu, the story tells how it does work, actually. Kintu bhat. Oh, sorry, repeat. Kintu.
Kintu.
Antakare.
Antakare.
Gatta adi.
Gatta adi.
Yeah, gatta adi avrita.
Gatta adi avrita.
Ratna pradipa.
Ratna pradipa.
Adihi.
Adihi.
Yatha.
Yatha.
Gatadi.
Gatadi.
Swavarna bhange.
Swavarna bhange.
Swayameva.
Swayameva.
Prakashati.
Prakashate.
Oh, this is too long. I'm just going to do this one little phrase and then we'll go into. We'll do it again in the evening. It says, but. So now he's going to tell how it does work, okay? Andhakara, you know what? Andha means blind. Andhakara means that which makes a person blind, darkness. So in the dark. So in the night or in the darkness. Gata adi, a pot, etc. Something like a pot. Avrita means covered by a pot or something like that. Avrita is covered. Ratna, a jewel. Or pradipa, a lamp. But they think of jewels as self-shining. As, you know, the jewels shine. And yeah, like Varasati, that's a magical jewel. Okay. So, like a jewel, like a precious stone, or like a lamp, etc. Pradipa, lamp, adi. So, he says, just as, gatta, adi, a pot, etc. Swa avarana bhange. When bhanga means to break. Upon the breaking of that which covers it, such as a pot, like the breaking of a pot, etc., which is covering the lamp. Well, say you have a lamp and you stick it in a pot, you know. If you break the pot, then the lamp shines or the jewel shines. So just like upon the breaking of that which is covering of it, such as by a pot, etc., gatta adi swa, breaking of it. Of it is what? The pradipa, the lamp, or the what is covering it. Covering what is the lamp or the jewel? Swayam eva prakashate. It itself shines. It shines by itself. It is self-luminous. So we have to break the pot. That's all that has to happen. The pot has to be broken so that the lamp, which is already shining, shines. That's their example. And we'll do the rest of it because this is all one sentence. It'll take me half an hour. We've done it for long enough now. That's kind of neat, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's amazing.
Om Purnamadam Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Hari Om.
That like using words to explain what can't really be
explained
words.
By words. Yeah. Exactly. Mm-hmm. The only reason it can be done is because you're there. So you can be pointed to, which is sometimes how we use the word lakshana, point to it, you know. And since it's there to be and self-evident, so prakasha, self-luminous, and it's you can make that viveka, that differentiation, and you're freed from the maya.
So clever that they can even explain it in such detail. That's
exactly.
Amazing.
It's mind-blowing. It's mind, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really, it's something so good. I just get so overwhelmed by the wonder of that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Is that why, maybe I have a wrong understanding, but is that why you can understand who you are, but you can't experience who you are?
Well, another way of saying that is the experience is already there.
Right.
And so there's no way of experiencing it as something that is not already already the self-luminous experience of your being. It's not possible because it's you're not objectifiable. It's the one non-dual, free from subject-object experience that's always there, just of yourself as self-luminous consciousness. So you can just say, do you have to bring in another consciousness to light up consciousness? So they use an example for that. Do you have to bring in another sun to light up the sun? It's already doing that itself. It doesn't need a luminary to light it up. Mm-hmm. And consciousness doesn't need another consciousness to light it up. It already is self-luminous. Yeah. So they say swaprakasha means self-luminous. Prakasha is light. Mm-hmm. It's self-luminous, we've translated. And siddha, it means it's self-evident, which means it doesn't require another means of knowledge to come in, like the vritti vyapti to come in and illumine it so that it can be known. Mm. It already is known in terms of experientially. Mm. It's not known from the standpoint of the mind that's experience has ignorance. You know, but from its own standpoint, it's self-evident. That's what they mean by, you know, it doesn't need to be lit up in order to be experienced. It's its own experience. Yeah. Go ahead.
So all of this makes sense, but there's certain little things like that occur to me, like how is it that a vritti, which has to be limited, vritti is always limited, how can a vritti pervade Brahman, which is limitless?
The thing is, we say the better word than limitless is non-dual. So if you use the word limitless, what it means is that there's nothing away from it from the standpoint of the creation.
Okay.
Right? So there's not Brahman here. It has borders. It's bordered by space. So that's what we mean by limitless. But the fact is, that Brahman, which is limitless from the standpoint of the creation, is really non-dual, which means free from time and space.
Mm-hmm.
So whether you're an Ajna, you have no knowledge, or you have knowledge, the whole Brahman always pervades the vritti. Because no time and space, no non-dual, it's not non-dual.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not big or small or anything like that.
Okay.
So you can know, you can't know Ishvara completely, because Ishvara is limitless in time, in the size of the upadhi.
In time and space. Yeah.
In time and space. Brahman's not in time and space.
Okay. Yeah, that's right. So, because that question comes from tending to confuse limitlessness in the sense of big.
Exactly.
Right? Which that's is not exactly really right. what we mean when we talk about Brahman.
No, because if you think so. the whole Maya upadhi, the whole Ishvara, the whole infinite creation with all of the different lokas, all of the different worlds, the heaven worlds and the hell worlds and everything that exists within duality, all of that exists in one non-dual Brahman, which is me. I am that one non-dual Brahman, because from my standpoint or from Ishvara's standpoint, I'm not limited by time and space. I'm not big or small. These words don't apply. I simply am.
Mm-hmm.
Then the Bible says, I am that I am. Mm-hmm. Some of these quotes are so beautiful because it's just the perfect. You know, I haven't seen any teaching tradition within those religions, but we don't know if with any of the different religions or spiritual disciplines, usually the public is not privy to whatever teaching methodologies are there. You know, we don't really know. Even in India, it's much more open. When you want to know the truth, you have to seek your guru. You know? So guru is there. The Upanishads are there, which contain the truth. They don't, but that person doesn't know what that truth is. And they can kind of say what they say, but they don't know what it means. But they do know that when they need to know, that when they become desirous of that knowledge, they can go to guru. Anyway.
So in this first part, we're talking about the implied meaning and then the Shakti. What is the term?
Shakti Vritti. And then the Lakshana Vritti.
Lakshana Vritti, okay.
Can you
you just explain that again? I don't know if I really understood the implied meaning.
Yeah, and I'll explain it.
Why
and,
the difference?
And later on.
Oh, is it?
It, but I'll explain it now. But later, there's a lot more to say about it. Just a lot more examples and things like that. But the Shakti Vritti means just the immediate, normal use of the word. So that means that that word is going to be something that lands, well, even abstract words, they land on some meaning within duality. And that's their immediate meaning. Okay. I said even, we can even use Lakshana Vrittis, the implied meaning of words, also are available to us within duality. But Brahman is not available to a Shakti Vritti, to the immediate meaning of the word, because it's not an object in the world for there to have a, where we have means of knowledge that automatically land on that. Brahman is an object, right? Of course, once you know the meaning of Brahman, then the Shakti Vritti is there for it. But not until it's there, through a pramana, through a means of knowledge, can there be any Shakti Vritti. But there, so we can't teach a mumukshu, somebody who's coming to gain knowledge through the use of the immediate meaning of the words, because we'll just keep them within duality, right? So the Shakti Vritti would be like, I'll give the three examples. If I were to say, I've taught this several times now, this, and I don't remember who's here for each time. Anyway, so I'm just going to, never hurts to hear it again. say if I say the red, if I say the red runs, red doesn't run. Red is a color. So there's no Shakti Vritti available there if I say the red runs. But because there's no Shakti Vritti and I'm not just crazy, the person will give me the benefit of the doubt. You know, say they look at the red running and I think, oh my God, this person thinks red is running. But if I'm pointing and then you see there's a pack of horses and one of them is red, I'm obviously just pointing to the red horse. Mm-hmm. So I have to add a word, horse, to bring it back to a Shakti Vritti, right? Because it's the lakshana of red that I have to be able to, I have to add something to red. I can't say the red runs. My mind has to say, yeah, the red horse runs. So I'm adding, that's a lakshana. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the implied meaning of red is red horse. And I get that by adding horse to the red. Right? Another stock example is, I used Swamiji as the example before, but it's actually, it's a gosha. It's a, the cow herders live on the river in India. You know, of the rivers, mm-hmm. These cow herders will live on the river. So we could say, oh, look at the little, it's a village, in a little village. Look at the little cow herders' village on the river. You probably say, yeah, look at them on the river, you don't have any problem. But actually, they're not on the river, they're on the banks, mm-hmm. Right? But you don't even think about it. You go from the Shakti to the Lakshana so quickly. Now here what you're doing is replacing the word river with banks, right? Where in the other one you're adding the word horse to red, right? So immediately your mind just does that. So it converts from the Shakti to the Lakshana. The other one that we use in the Advaita, the Mahavakya, Tattvamasi, you are that. We can use this example that, the wave ocean example. If as the Mahavakya, the Upanishads, we said, oh, wave, you are the ocean. You are the ocean. I'm not the ocean. I'm the wave, you know. How can I be the ocean? But if I have Shraddha in the teacher wave, then what has to happen through the teaching, the upadhi, the limiting factor of the wave, has to be removed, and the infinite upadhi of the ocean has to be removed through teaching to recognize what is essentially the same in both, which is the water. So that's what happens here with the teaching, tat tvam asi, you are that. You are Brahman. right? The limiting factors that cause yourself to be taken to be a limited being, body, mind, sense organs, has to be differentiated. The body, mind, sense organs has to be differentiated from the Atma. And the whole Maya Upadhi has to be differentiated from the conditioning adjunct of Maya. The whole creation has to be differentiated from Ishvara. To be able to say, you are that. Yourself is infinite. And so that's all Lakshana also. You know, we're using the words we have here to use, which are all Shakti, you know, to point to something which is not available in the world. But it's only available because I'm it. I am that. Otherwise, even though I can't be an object in the world, existence is pervasively experienced in the world. It is, it is, it is. Consciousness is pervasive. It is known, it is known, it is known, it is known. We have the direct experience of myself as Ananda, but it's temporal because I'm only really experiencing Vritti Ananda. But I'm very present there. Right? So what has to happen is the teacher has to, through the means of knowledge, perform this active differentiation, which is there to be seen because you're here. You know, if you weren't here, then, like Jung says, who cares? He says the Hindus are so arrogant that they're talking about an infinite consciousness that they have no way of knowing. It's Shakti Vritti. It's true. From what he knows. Mm-hmm. How can the, and I put that in that dissertation, that first book I wrote. I have his quote. And I respect it. I talk about it. Why he could say that. Mm-hmm. What's missing? The teaching methodology. Because he's right. If just there's some infinite consciousness, what is that? I'm a limited consciousness. I'm not an infinite consciousness. I keep gathering data and my consciousness continues to grow. But I have no means of knowledge for any kind of infinite consciousness. He says that. He calls us all arrogant. Because we're not, but what he's saying though, is we're not following the rules in terms of gaining knowledge. Because our means of knowledge have epistemological limits.
This thing of this implied meaning, you know, the thing is, it. Because the other way of talking about it, isn't it, Adiyarupa
Apavada? Well, that's
right.
That is the, I would say, the essential basket in mm-hmm. which all the prakriyas exist.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but it's all going to come down to that. Adiyarupa is kind of recognizing this whole creation exists in the self, and the Apavada is the teaching which negates it. Negates it means makes it into nitya. Starts out with this whole creation is, we experience it, and then as real, and then we understand it as nitya.
But see, I guess I look at Adiyarupa Apavada as, in a certain way, removing all the meanings, all the objectified meaning we have with a word.
But how can you remove it?
Well, you go to subtler and subtler meanings until...
Until
all that's left is the self.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay. That's exactly right. But that's,
so that is the implied meaning, basically. Okay.
You're taking off all of the dresses.
Yeah, all the sakshi vrittis. So to
yeah,
speak.
All of the things that you had taken to be consciousness.
All the shakti vrittis. I mean.
Yeah. All the shakti vrittis. All the things that you had taken to be consciousness. Conscious being, me, are one by one removed. All the upadis are removed. So from the wave, all of the upadis, the wave upadis
are
removed.
Like when you use the word consciousness, instead of using the shakti vritti like Jung, you take away all the implied meanings of consciousness. Or rather, all the direct meanings of consciousness.
That's right.
Consciousness
is left. You take this off, consciousness is left. Take this off, consciousness is left.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. So you keep removing the shakti vritti, the immediate meaning of the word, leaving leaving what is left, which is the lakshana.
Which would be the lakshana, the implied. Okay.